green. The green doesn't symbolize I made it on the top, but RoboCop last year was a shock. The tone of the Popeye cut shook your butt. Kids are screaming, the media says what? Kind of music is this for you to dance to? The man with the plan and the band demands you. Leave the smack.
All right, all right. It's Friday. That means we got through another week, and we're looking forward to this weekend. Big stuff happening this weekend. So this is Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay. Eric Taylor, and the media says, what? shout out to Chub Rock, man. Treat them right. We're going to treat you right, our audience. So give us a little ring, listen in, email us, all that good stuff. Hit us up at 718-664-9098, and it's rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. I've thrown out there to folks, who you think are the top five wide receivers of all time, and we'll talk about that stuff and more. And hit us up on Twitter and Facebook, Ray and Tay Today. Ray, let them know, man. Busy show.
Busy. Yeah, we got some breaking news. We got some injury news. We'll go through what's going on. There's a big fight this weekend. We're going to go through this game last night, the Denver-Oakland game in Oakland. We've got a preview of our Heisman Trophy, who we're going to vote for. Tomorrow the Heisman Trophy is handed out. Big game last night for the Knicks against the Heat.
Nice
little rivalry. The re-emerging atop the Eastern Conference. And we got NFL Week 14. We got five games we'll preview for you in NFL Week 14. And then, like Tay said, we've got a special Friday segment for you. Top five wide receivers of all time. So think about it. Think about who are your top five receivers. Think about eras. Think about the fact that lately, last 10, 15 years, they pass a lot more than they did back in the days. But, yeah, keep that in mind. So at the end of the show, we're going to talk about our top five receivers of all time. So let's get into some breaking news.
Well, listen, let's start off with Big Ben for Pittsburgh Steelers will be back at starting quarterback, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm excited about that. And the owner of the Chargers is denying the reports, Spanos, that he's decided on the fate of A.J. Smith and North Turner, even though there's reports saying that they're done at the end of the season. We shall see.
You almost have to deny that, though, because you got to get the players to
play. Oh, of course you got to deny it. But they're done. We all know they're done. And, hey, maybe Norv will come to Dallas as the offensive coordinator. We'll see what happens. Who knows? Help out your boy down there, Garrett. Also, for the injury front, I know I had him on my team. He's been a great pickup. He has a concussion for the Jacksonville wide receiver Cecil Shorts, so he might not be going. James Starks, running back from Green Bay, is not playing, so they picked up Ryan Grant. We talked about that last time. He'll probably play with Alex Green. And then also, Jordy Nelson is not playing at all. So
right, Jennings is out also,
huh?
In Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Vic and McCoy are both out. So a lot of banged-up football players going into Week 14.
Yeah, I think Vic and McCoy are fine. I just think they're just in Philly. They're just, the season's done. They're going to go with their rookies,
Yeah, I don't blame them. You know what you can get out of Vic and McCoy. And or in the offseason, you have to make a decision on Vic. You got to make a decision on what you're doing with him.
Yeah, I think he's going to be somewhere else, whether it's New York, Arizona, Jacksonville, one of these places, Kansas City. There's at least three or four teams that are probably going to have new quarterbacks at the helm next year, so we'll see what happens. But
we have some basketball injuries too. Gasol is going to probably miss another game. Carmelo is questionable for Saturday's game with that finger.
Yeah, at the Bulls.
Yeah.
And your boy's not coming back, they said, for until maybe after December, Dirk Nowitzki. Amari is getting questionable about Christmas maybe, and, they pushed back Steve Nash. And there was somebody else.
They need to get the Ravens trainers out there. Whoever's dealing with Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs need to be just treat everybody. Go talk to Nowitzki. Go talk
to
Amari.
They need
to
come to Arizona. Help me with my knees and my shoulder. You talk about that, man. Oh, man.
Help John Wall in Washington.
Yes. Oh, that's who it is. John Wall. He can't. Yeah, he's still rocking in the boot. So he might be coming back a little bit slower than expected. You feel bad for the Wizards, you know, big win over Miami, but with only two W's, it's, you know, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
you
they
know,
need
so,
some talent. So hopefully this year's draft, maybe next year's draft, John Wall gets healthy. They need an upgrade in talent. I know they want Ernie Grunfeld's job down there, but that team just doesn't have a lot of talent on it. You know, Sarah.
No, but if they get healthy
and
Beal playing with Wall and the healthy Okafor, Nene, and Ariza, it's not that bad.
I don't know. They're a bunch of old players.
Well, one more draft. I like Nene when he's healthy. Okafor never became the player that we thought, you know. But,
yeah, remember that year when it was Okafor and number one was Dwight Howard, and then number two was Okafor and Ben Gordon coming off their national championship at UConn.
A lot of hype, everybody said,
who's this Dwight Howard kid? And
yeah, he came out of nowhere from Atlanta.
Yeah, they ended up taking Howard over Okafor in Orlando, which is a great decision. And then Okafor's been a solid role player, but not a number two overall pick for a big man.
Yeah, and we'll have to do that in our top five, like the top five number one or number two pick, you know, draft bus. Because you got Benoit Benjamin, Sam Bowie, Charles Shackelford, all those type of guys that just never really panned out. Greg Oden, of course.
Michael Olowokandi.
Oh, gosh. Well, let's keep it moving. And you talked about that fight, man. Marquez, Pacquiao 4. What are you thinking?
Oof, I'm thinking that these guys are almost dead even. I mean, if you look at every statistic, except for the fights are 2-0-1 to Pacquiao. But if you look at the fight chart, the stats, these guys are about as close as two boxers can be. So it's hard to say that either one is really dominating the other. I think Pacquiao wins the fight. Maybe it goes 12 rounds. Maybe it goes another decision. But these guys are so close. The only reason why Marquez might win is if Pacquiao's not concentrating on the fight and he's got other things on his mind, whether it be, you know, being in the government in the Philippines or he's thinking ahead to Mayweather if that ever happens. But, you know, familiarity, these guys know each other and they know each other's tendencies and it's hard, you know, it's hard to beat a guy four times or it would be 3-0-1. So I wouldn't be surprised if Marquez pulls it out, but I just like Pacquiao. I like Pacquiao in a decision. You know, if there's a knockout, it'll be real late, 10th round, 11th round, 12th round, something like that. But in a slight margin, like he's won the other two fights and then had the draw. But I like Manny Pacquiao in this one.
Well, I'm gonna tell you like this. For me, these guys are like, you know, guys fighting in the back alley, right? You know, they know each other so well, you could just throw the beers down on the ground and just get at it. So
like two brothers that fight every night, you know?
Exactly. So I'm like, you know, forget about Mayweather. It could happen. It can happen. We'll see what happens. Who knows? But he can't overlook this guy. I think if it goes the distance in a decision, Marquez will win. I think Pacquiao is going to have to get him 9th, 10th, 11th round and drop this guy, get him so tired and knock him out. I just think punch volume and just the way Marquez moves, I just think decisions, it can get real ugly and Marquez can look better in that type of, you know, you put it to the refs. But to me, I just think Pacquiao will get him. I'm going to say like 9th, 10th round Pacquiao. But I still want to see Pacquiao, Mayweather, not to knock this fight. But boxing doesn't matter to me anymore unless these guys fight. If they don't fight, then I'm just going to be upset with them and depressed.
Even if they do, they strung us along so much that I don't know if I want to give them my money. I mean, this fight should have happened 5 years ago.
That's the one fight.
But it should have happened 5 years ago. How did they each make an extra $50 million, you know, on pay-per-view? And they're shooting themselves in the foot because of this whole pay-per-view model. The kids don't like boxing anymore. They like the MMA, and part of it is
outdated.
On free TV,
yeah.
And they don't cater to the kids, and they don't build up the younger generation to be boxing fans.
Totally right. So, well, we'll see. Hopefully it's a good fight. I'm not going to pay for it, but I will definitely catch it and see what's going on in terms of replays and stuff like that, but we both got Pacquiao. So let's talk about Saturday night, ESPN 8 o'clock. the Heisman. Three finalists. They normally invite four or five. So Lee was not invited, and neither was Mariotto or any of the guys, or Barnard from Oregon.
Yeah.
You've got Teo.
Monty Paul, yeah.
Yeah, Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel, and Colin Klein. What are you thinking?
So it really comes down to two players, right? Because you're not going to vote Colin Klein over Johnny Manziel. So it really comes down to – so Colin Klein had a great year, one loss, but that loss pretty much cost him the Heisman because his numbers statistically aren't as good as Manziel. So if you're going to vote for a quarterback, it's going to be Manziel over Klein. So we got to put Klein to the side. So it really comes down to a two-man battle.
I think Klein's in third, definitely.
Between the redshirt freshman, Johnny Manziel, and the senior, Manti Te'o. So, you know, I've always had an issue with the Heisman and the fact that there hasn't been a defensive player to win the Heisman since, or there's been one. And Charles Woodson
won
in
97. And he also played offense.
And he also played offense and a little bit of special teams. So really, he wasn't, I mean, he was a defensive player, but he wasn't strictly a defensive player. And Manti Te'o is. So I really would love to see a defensive player win the Heisman. And if there's a year where somebody could do it, it's this year because of two things. Obviously, Te'o has had a great year. His team is undefeated. He's the best player on that team by far. He's the anchor of that team. And, you know, we'll get into some of his stats in a sec. But the guy, if this is the year, he could win it. And there is there has been an inherent bias towards not voting underclassmen for the Heisman. So if enough voters have an anti-Manziel, it's like the Hall of Fame voters in baseball that say, oh, yeah, you can't win it on the first ballot. So the theory is, oh, Johnny Manziel might have two more years to play at Texas A&M. So we're
maybe that's dissipating a bit. Maybe it's dwindling down.
It has because a sophomore won the Heisman a few years ago, right? So Tebow won the Heisman a few years ago. So at least they're able to look past that and give an underclassman the Heisman. So that's good. That's good. Because, look, if he's the best player, he's the best player. I don't care if he's a sophomore. I don't care if he's Doogie Howser. I don't care if he's 14 years old in college, you know, getting it done.
I have to bring out Doogie now. Come on.
Yeah, Doogie's my man. Doogie Howser, MD.
It make me think about Doogie Howser, MD, and the Wonder Years. What you know about that?
Goodness.
But let me say this, right? To me, Johnny Football, number one, we always talk about that Heisman moment, that Heisman game. He had it, beating Bama. But, you know, I mean, he played in the SEC, first year in the SEC, and not just first year, but his first year starting. But he's, you know, breaking some all-time records from that, you know, TiVo and Cam has set in the conference. And, you know, to pass for over 3,000 yards, to rush over 1,000 yards, to me, Johnny Football and beating Bama in – see, it would be different if it was at Texas A&M, right? But winning against Bama in Bama
– Tuscaloosa, yeah.
To me, that's the Heisman right there. He had that moment.
You know,
he had that moment.
The anti-Manziel arguments are not that strong, right? Let's go through his stats. He had 24 passing touchdowns, 19 rushing touchdowns, 4,600 yards of total offense,
ridiculous.
Which was 70% of the team. And
ridiculous.
He had – so everybody who doesn't want to give it to Manziel says that of his 12 games, he had two bad games, quote-unquote. One was against Florida and one was against LSU, where he had
two
no
great
passing
defenses, by the way.
Touchdowns. Exactly. So he played his very first game as a collegiate was against Florida, and they have the number one pass defense in the country. And then he plays the number nine LSU defense, and against those two defenses, he only, quote-unquote, had 526 yards and no passing touchdowns. He did have a rushing touchdown and three interceptions. So he's a redshirt freshman. He has two bad games, quote-unquote, against SEC teams with top 10 defenses. And yet he still for the year has 43 touchdowns, 4,600 yards of offense, and goes into the untouchable Alabama and beats in Tuscaloosa and beats Alabama. He's unbelievable, and he really does deserve the Heisman. So, I give it to Johnny Football.
But listen, Tail's impressive, right? 7 interceptions for a linebacker. That's more than anybody else defensively in college football. So he's impressive too, and they're undefeated, and they'll play against Bama. I just
103 tackles.
Yeah,
down. He had 133 as a sophomore, 128 as a junior.
Yeah, and people even talk about NFL, like he'll be a first-round pick, but they question can he cover, you know, a Jimmy Graham or can he cover a Sproles? He doesn't have that much speed. He's a good leader.
Who can, though? Which linebacker
can? But the question is, out of the backfield, can he really stick with running backs? What type of linebacker is he in NFL? Like, okay, you say he's a first-round pick, right?
Right.
And people say this, but if you're not covering a tight end – and you're not covering a running back, and you don't have the speed to be a blitzing linebacker, he's not Von Miller, then,
no.
You know. And I don't know if he's better than Kuechly over there at Carolina.
Is he so. Ray Maluga?
Hey, we'll see. So, anyway, who's your vote, man? Who are you picking?
I'm giving it to Johnny Football. I was on the bandwagon in the beginning of the season when he started putting up some big numbers. He's a freshman, but I don't care. He's the best. He's
man.
The best performer of the year in college football. Now, the best talent is Marquise Lee over at Notre Dame.
And he should have – Marquise Lee had a crazy season, should have been invited. I'm sorry.
And special
teams. I guess
teams,
it's just how
know.
The votes go, but to only have three guys there, I'm surprised. You know what I mean?
Right. So who's your vote?
Listen, you were talking about him all year. I came on a little bit late, but, you know respect is due where respect is due. And to me, I was blown away. That Alabama game blew me away. He iced it when he had to. They fought back hard, tried to come back, and he said, no, Bama, not in my house. And that's all you need to know. Johnny Football, baby, is the Heisman Trophy winner of 2012. That's how I see it. So, listen, let's take a quick break and come back with our New York Knicks. We are New York, and this is basketball. We are the New York Knicks.
When I wake up, I look into the mirror. I can see a clearer vision. I should start living a day. Cause today is gonna be the day. It's gonna be the day. Cause today is gonna be the day. It's gonna be the day.
Yeah.
So we're back and we're talking New York Knicks at the Miami Heat. And just to set the stage, if you didn't watch the game,
oh, gosh.
53-53 at the half. So pretty
if
much.
If you didn't watch the game,
yourself,
what the heck were you doing? Unless you're working or sleeping or whatever. I don't know. Come on, you got to watch that game.
So you're thinking to yourself, okay, these teams are neck and neck. You know, they're tied at the half. There were some individual plays on both sides, some clutch shooting on both sides. Raymond Felton
Felton was incredible to me.
He hit that long-range three, and then at the end of the quarters, there were some clutch shots on both sides. So you're thinking, all right, it's going to go down the last 5 minutes of the, you know, of the fourth quarter. And then, bam!
The third quarter,
it was it. The Knicks put up 37. They outscored them in the third quarter, and then they held them to 12 in the fourth quarter. So the
incredible.
Knicks
the defense
by 20.
Yeah, and
they
won by
20,
in the first half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what's the most impressive to me about this team, and, you know, obviously no Melo, and they've also been going without Amari and Shumpert all year, right? But this game, you know, everybody's like they played back-to-back. Melo got hurt. They were just in Charlotte. Heat lost a bad loss to the Wizards. They're at home. They're resting. They want revenge. Stephen A. was saying, oh, I've talked to the players. And they want revenge for, you know, losing the Sandy game up in New York. And Dwayne Wade felt they shouldn't have played that game. Yeah, all the stuff, right? So you got all this pre-hype. Without Melo, the Knicks smack them by 20? You got Steve Novak putting it on the floor, not just hitting a three, but dribbling in and hitting clutch twos. Smith, Felton, Kid Chandler, who's shooting over 70% for the season, having another good game. I mean, it was beautiful. Wallace played big. Everybody. The New York Knicks, and I know that, and I've argued with Ray about this off air, about this not being, you know, sustainable or you know, what happens when so-and-so comes back. They shoot too many threes. Yes, they do shoot too many threes. They made 18. But I'll say this. the shots are open, the offense is flowing, everybody's sharing the ball, and, you know, for me, I always like to penetrate and draw fouls, and I think they'll be able to do that organically with Amari and Melo coming back as the year goes on. But, you know, really judge this team come March 1st when, you know, they've had Shumpert for a couple of weeks and Amari's been back and they're playing. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, the Miami Heat, they are on notice. The New York Knickerbockers are here to play some ball. And the Heat are who we thought they were. We went in the house and we took care of them, baby. There was no joke. The Knicks are nasty. I don't care what nobody says. I don't care what Ray says. Tay is here to tell you, Tay for two. We clapping boards in them clowns. Yo, F the Heat. That's what I'm saying. F the
Heat.
Hold on now.
It's a family show here. It's a family show. Let's keep it clean. So all I'm saying is that we're only 18 games into the season. I love what I'm seeing so far. I love it. I love it.
Break it up
in
sections of 20. Like the NFL does four quarters, NBA does four quarters. So two more games.
So I like the defense that we're playing at first and foremost. So Mike Woodson's a defensive guy. You know, obviously the Knicks draft him. He's an old school Knick, and then you know, coached for many years in Atlanta with the Hawks and so forth. So I like the defensive principles. I think that, believe it or not, there's still some remnants of Mike D'Antoni and the fact of his offense.
Oh, of the, how they spread the floor,
the ball around. And
Mike Woodson will admit to that.
Man. I'm sorry?
But we have 3 point guards, Ray, and that's what makes it so nasty.
Griglione,
Kidd, and Felton.
It's great. The ball movement is great. The unselfishness is great. And for some reason, and look, I'm happy, but Carmelo came back from the offseason, and J.R. Smith came back from the offseason with this new sense of selflessness and playing like a team. And like you said, the 3 point guards on the team plus the old veterans that play defense and
only 7 turnovers.
I love it. Everything is positive. I have nothing but positive.
We're number one in turnovers in the NBA, the least amount of turnovers. Knicks are number one. Last 4 games, it was like 7, 8, 9, and 7. We're incredible. We're not even getting 10 turnovers a game. We average, I think, 11, the least in the NBA. But we're playing incredible ball. I love it. To me, the Heat, they need to worry. Wade does not look like himself. You don't know how Ray's going to hold up health-wise. You can't rely on Haslam. He's got some back issues, and Joel Anthony's not that much. Chalmers is, you know, inconsistent and a little injured. We'll see what happens with Norris Cole. Chris Bosh is like, I don't know, sometimes yes,
sometimes
no. You
know what they are? They're like the Giants in football. And they're like other teams. With 2 back-to-back finals appearances, 1 win and 1 loss, they just want to make the dance. Now, if they're a 1 seed, a 2 seed, look, they're not going to drop below 3, right? So they'll either be 1, 2, or 3 in the East. It doesn't matter. This Heat team could win on the road. They could win at home. It's all about getting healthy and playing good ball in April. So for them, they've reached that pinnacle where, because only Ray Allen is really new in terms of getting into the rotation, it seems like he's in the rotation. That Heat team, it's like everything before April is just a waste of time. They're all about the playoffs. Whereas the Knicks have to learn how to play together. The Knicks have to learn what their identity is, especially in close
and
games.
Get the confidence.
A lot of our wins, and a lot of the Knicks' wins have been blowouts. So I want to see the Knicks in close games when they have to go to half-court offense. Carmelo, what's he going to do out of a double team? Who's our next scorer in case Carmelo can't get the open shot? You know, J.R. Smith hit that big shot against Charlotte. So
huge,
the Knicks are the team that needs this more, right? The Nets, well, the Nets will be there too. But the Heat, they can afford to lose these games because they're the two-time defending Eastern Conference champion and a defending NBA champion. So for them, it's just a matter of hold court, get to the playoffs, and be somewhat
healthy.
I
definitely agree. It's a positive statement for the Knicks, and I think that, it's stuff you can build off of, and it's good for them. You know, obviously tonight you're talking about like some first-place teams. Golden State's coming to Brooklyn, so that should be interesting to see how Brooklyn does. I don't know. They're still saying Lopez might still be out. We'll see. But one thing that you talked about with, Melo, who, you know, might be out and he's got 26 a game, to see JR step up and hit that shot, that is a great confidence builder. He said it's the first game winner in his career. Didn't play
college
basketball.
That's amazing for a guy who shoots so much.
Yeah, never did it in high school. Never did it in Denver. You know, well, he always played with Melo in Denver, so you know Melo took the shots. So, but let me ask you this. We definitely got to give congrats to our boy Kobe Bean Bryant, 30,000 points. And there's been that controversy. Everybody's been talking, ESPN and everybody, you know. Is he a top five player? Is he number one Laker of all time? And I think, you know, I think we need to just celebrate what he did and appreciate it. And I think when it's done, we can look back and really say, I think no matter what, he'll go down as the second best two guard of all time. And we'll do a show where we talk about maybe our top five or top 10 players of all time. Got to do top 10 because I think the top five is, you know, pretty similar for most people. But, you know, listen, Kobe is great. I just think right now with this team, they got a lot to worry about. They need Nash and this Hacker Howard. Dwight needs to make his free throws. And D'Antoni said he's not going to take him out of the game.
But that's not going to happen. I mean, Dwight is what he is.
Well, but listen,
right?
He needs to try to work on it, right? I don't think he works on it enough. And
but this
I
late
think
in his
Kobe,
career,
I think
wait,
Kobe
this
and
late
Howard,
in his career, is he really going to get better? Did Shaq get better? Did Wilt get better? This late in their career, Dwight is what he is. He's a great player, and he's got one huge flaw, and that's free throw shooting. So if you take him on, as the Lakers want to do, and sign him for, you know, 5 years and have him be the face of the franchise as Kobe, you know, fades out in the next 2 to 3 years, you know what you're getting. Now, you won 3 championships with Shaq. Shaq claimed to hit the free throws when he needed to. I don't know if statistically that's true, but Shaq had a similar flaw. So you know what you've got with Dwight Howard, but you got to tell him, look, Dwight, even though – you know, we want you to work on your free throws, but we need you to be mentally in the game. Even if you miss some free throws, we need you to block shots, we need you to rebound, we need you to play the defense that a 3-time defensive player of the year needs to play. So
yeah.
I don't know that they're changing his free throws anytime soon.
I think you can always improve on something in life and in sports, and I think some of it's muscle memory. I just think he's got to work harder. I'll say this, I don't think Kobe and Howard like each other, and I don't think it's going to work out for them long term. Even though Kobe might only be there 1, 2, 3 more years, we'll see what happens with Kobe. I don't think that this is, the two of them are going to be a happy marriage.
Gasol's not wearing his big boy pants. Dwight Howard doesn't get along with Kobe. Kobe obviously realizes he needs a big man. He's going to have to make amends with the fact that if he doesn't like these big men, he's not going to win a championship. So
Gasol. I think he just keeps a mental toughness on Gasol because I think they've won together. He knows what Gasol needs, right? I think the issue is D'Antoni isolating Gasol, you know, if you ask me. So, but, you know, hey, listen, by the way, your boy Mayo, and talking about the other game with TNT, 23 points and did his thing, hit a big shot, and with 36 seconds left, and they won 97-94 over the Suns. And, you know, the Suns are funny, man. The owner was like, hey, you know, you can return your tickets if you didn't have fun at the game and this and that. And I'm just, like, cracking up. I mean,
did they give stats,
you know,
on that? Did how many people return their tickets? It was like,
you know,
fan
we'll find out
night.
What happened. You know, they got to fill out these forms and stuff. But, the Suns, you know, they miss Nash. They said their season tickets aren't that bad, but it's like the night of the game, the people that used to come are not coming. So I guess that's why he's trying to do certain things like this. But it's very gimmicky. Speaking of gimmicky, before we get into the NFL and we do our stuff, did you hear? Obviously, Time Magazine, the commissioner was on a cover, and he just had some interviews. They're talking about changing the rules for the kickoff, so we don't have these collisions and concussions and stuff like that. To be honest with you, I want the game to be safer, but I don't like it. I don't like what they're talking about. Obviously, you could just start it at the 20. You know, there have been talks of so you don't have these crashes to, like when you want to do an onside kick, where you would just have the team would have the ball on their own 30, and it would be 4th and 15, and they would either have to go for it or they would punt it away. And on the punts, there's less, you know, because of the blocking, there's less speed and collisions than kickoffs. I don't know. Most of the kickoffs go into the end zone. So to me, I'm like, that's good enough. I don't think we need to change it more, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if statistically people get hurt more, disproportionately more on kickoffs. I wonder if we're...
Oh, no. They've had studies, yeah. They do.
And they do say that that's by far the most dangerous play?
The kickoff is the most dangerous play, which is why they've
already
changed it. It
makes sense logically, but how many kickoffs are there in a game, right? Let's say there's...
Well, because it's 11 and 11 going at each other, like, running full speed, so yeah.
That's true, but you know. But typically the contact is I don't know, 3-4 people. I get it. But then you start to push the lines of what is the integrity of football. How do you kick off if there's no kickoff?
Right.
You know what I mean?
You need 24 owners, so to me they're not going to get 24 to approve it. You know, and then...
Well, it's funny because the owners can get away with... Look, if I would argue it's in the owner's best interest potentially to get rid of kickoffs, A, because people get hurt less, so they got to pay fewer people on IR and whatever. And also, if you think about it, you have these specialists that are there for kickoffs, right? The your third string linebacker and your fourth
right,
string
but the
running
union
back.
Is like, hey, if we agree to anything, we're not going to just lose jobs.
Right.
And I get that too. You know, listen, they don't want to lose jobs, so. And actually, I think they should extend the roster. And they have for the pup team.
Fighting tooth and nail not to do that.
Right. It's 53, and then they extended the practice squad from like 2 to 4 guys, or something, or 4 to 6. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
Leave it as it is.
Yeah, you don't want to ruin the integrity of the game. You really don't. And I know that safety is important, and I'm all about safety, but let's not destroy the game. It's already getting a little too soft for my, not just my liking, most of the NFL fans and
you know what's
old
funny
NFL players.
What I found interesting is that all the commentators, or not all of the commentators, but a lot of the commentators are quarterbacks, ex-quarterbacks, and almost without exception, to a man, one by one, they're all saying that the game is too soft, which is kind of funny because you would think offensive players love it because all of these rules essentially protect the offense. So
yeah, but they're
guys,
football players too, man. They're tough. These are tough guys. Dilfer, Young, they took shots. They're tough guys. Even Golic. Golic's disgusted by the game. And, you know, a lot of these guys should be because, Ed Reed, like he said, you know, he plays the game right. He's not a cheating player, and even for him to get those fines in most people's eyes, were ridiculous, you know. I'll say this, as we get ready to segue into football, with Big Ben coming back, a few fantasy heads, start Mike Wallace, start Antonio Brown like I am in my football fantasy league, and, you know, maybe Heath Miller and Jonathan Dwyer. I'm revved up for the Steelers against the Chargers, man.
Playoffs, week 14 in most leagues is the playoffs, so
your
roster's
so
right.
Let's start to break down these games. And the first game, wow, the Battle of the Beltway. 9-3 Ravens at the 6-6 Washington Redskins. Ray, what are you feeling?
Oof. RG3 is on a roll, so it's hard to say that roll won't continue, right? There's no reason to think that way. And Baltimore's a little turmoil there with the injuries, and Suggs is having some issues, physically and off the field, and Ray Lewis coming back next week, so they might get a little distracted. And I think they're not as good as that 9-3 record would lead you to believe. So, if it were 2 weeks ago, I'd say the Ravens, no problem. But I might go for the – I might be going on the Redskins right now. I might go with the home team. Although, you know, in that Battle of the Beltway, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of Ravens fans trying to get some tickets for this game. So I think the Redskins pull off a tight one. I think the Redskins win 24-23. I know you're into the scores, so I think a really close game, Redskins pull it out. I like the passing game of the Redskins, playing off the run, getting our boy RG3 out there out of the pocket. I like that little option that he runs. I'm going. It's a momentum play. It's a momentum play. They're about as hot a team, and he's about as hot a player as there is in the league right now. And that combination of Griffin and Morris this week is going to pass the combination of quarterback runner, you know, yards, rushing yards in NFL history. So, and they're both rookies. So think about how exciting that is if you're a Washington, D.C. football fan. So, yeah, I think momentum continues. I think the Redskins.
Our boy Sean Tavoy, he is a Redskin fan. He told me to tell you skins all the way.
All right. What do you think? You think the Ravens have a chance? I mean, obviously they have a chance. Do you think the Ravens will win the game?
They have a chance. I think Ray Rice is going to be hard for the Redskins. But one thing I've noticed, they're getting a little bit healthier week to week. I think Haslam is a defensive coordinator, much better than a head coach, and he's got this Redskins defense on fire. Even though it's still local, it's still a road game, and Flacco's not as good on the road, I think the Redskins have a good home field advantage. It's electric. It's going to be crazy down there. What I do like is the fact that his number one receiver is back, you know, for his third straight week in a row, and he's really healthy, and now he's a stud with them. And I just think that Garcon, Griffin, and Morris, that three-headed monster is one
like
for
the
ages.
Dream team.
Yeah, it's like the Cowboys, your little three guys that you know, I like to mention in my rants. But I got the Redskins like 27-26. I think they win a close one, and I just think RG drives down and they kick a field goal to win 27-26. But should be good, though. I'm definitely hyped up. Should be good. Now, the second game we're going to talk about, how about them Cowboys? Another 500
team
in NFC East. 6-6, right, going in. Yeah, this is big. Going into who that? Who that Bengals? Who that going to think they're going to beat them Bengals? 7-5 Bengals, Cincinnati Bengals, the AFC North. What are you feeling, man? I know it's your team.
So let me put that out there. But I think the Bengals are on a roll. I think the Bengals are doing all right. And the key for their long-term success this season especially is to get Ben Jarvis Green Ellis off. And, you know, Andy Dalton to A.J. Green is one of the better combinations, and Jermaine Gresham is the man, and their defense is you know, has been up and down. But I think
they're playing good ball right now.
Yeah, if they can get a running game with Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, and he's had you know, some really good games the last few weeks. He's been scoring. He's been rushing for, you know,
100 yards, 3 weeks in a row.
100 yards, last three games. Yeah, last time, I think that the last time a Bengals runner did it was Corey Dillon back in the days before he went to the Patriots in 99.
Before the biz began.
So, exactly. So, I like the Bengals. I like the Bengals. I like the Bengals in this game. I think Dallas is a win one, lose one kind of team. I mean, I think at best they're going to go 8-8, and you know, they're not ready for prime time. They ultimately shoot themselves in the foot. You know, I think Dez Bryant could still have a big game, and Romo can have a big game. DeMarco Murray coming back is big for them. Still think that the problems on offensive line, the problems with their linebackers, the inconsistent play on defense, giving up big plays. I think ultimately, the Bengals have a better team, and the Bengals win.
What's the score?
I like the Bengals 28-24, another high-scoring game.
Pretty close. Yeah, I got to agree with you with the Bengals, and I am not a Cowboys fan, and I actually am rooting for the Cowboys this week. Imagine that, because of the Bengals and Steelers are battling it out for that wild card. I need the Cowboys to win, so it's hard to root for them, but I am going to. I think Romo will have a big game. I think Dez Bryant, but I just think the offensive line cannot handle your boy Geno Atkins and Michael Johnson, those young, thoroughbred defensive linemen that the Bengals have, and Ray Malaluga. I like this Bengal team. They're scary. I think that they're learning still how to play, right? The second-year guys, they're young pups. But I got to tell you, you know, it's a shame Sanu went down, but Hawkins is back healthy. But I think Gresham is finally finding a groove. Like, he's like, wait a minute, I am pretty good at tight end, huh? Like, he woke up. He heard the alarm clock, and I think Dalton is solid. Their offensive line is pretty good. And if you can get Ben Jarvis, he doesn't even have to get 100 yards. If he can get 20 carries, 80 yards, he's just moving the chains. I think that A.J. Green, Gresham, Hawkins, I think they do enough. And I think they pull out a pretty tight one. I'm going to go a little bit lower scoring. I'm going to go 23-20. Bengals beat the Cowboys.
Okay. So let's move on to the next one. What do you think about the Bears?
Yep. What we got next?
At the Vikings. The 8-4 Bears at the 6-6 Vikings. So pretty much almost a must-win for the Vikings. And the Bears have been stumbling a little bit, and it looks like the Packers are getting ready to overtake them for the NFC North. So what do you think about
that?
Right.
They had that tiebreaker on them, yeah. You know, the NFC North is a tough division, you know. You know what's so funny? To me, it's so easy just to say Vikings lose this game. Percy Harvin's out. They don't really have receivers. That's it. It's a wrap. They're done for the season, right? He's out for the season. But there's a gentleman that goes by the name of AP who was up there with Manning for Comeback Player of the Year. And
MVP, frankly.
And, yeah, and I got to say, and, you know, we didn't get to talk about it, so we'll talk about it in a little bit after we finish these games, that Raider-Bronco game. But I got to go with the upset and the Vikings. I think Urlacher being out.
Wow.
I think the Bears are a little banged up. I think the Vikings, their defensive line, Jared Allen and the boys at home, they play very different. You know, there's a different type of game that they play. And I think it's going to be a slugfest. And I just think the Bears' offense is so inconsistent. Yes, Brandon Marshall will do his things, but I definitely think safety Harrison Smith will come over and double-team a young guy in Notre Dame. And your guys are doing really good.
The drop-off between Brandon Marshall and Earl Bennett is huge. So if you can stop Brandon Marshall, you pretty much can stop the Bears. And especially the pass.
And the offensive line doesn't give Cutler enough time. And I just think I don't know if they can really stop AP. I really think the Vikings are – it's going to be one of those close battles. I think they win this one like 21-17 Vikings.
So despite all the injuries, so Urlacher's out, Tim Jennings is probably out. You got Nick Roach and Geno Hayes starting at linebacker for the Bears, and I think they're the key. I think the Bears linebackers are the key to the game because, really, Adrian Peterson's the best player on the field. And if you can contain him, if he gets 100 yards, if you can contain him, I think Christian Ponder will make a mistake or two, and the Bears ultimately win the game. So I think the Bears go in there, and they go to Minnesota, and they win a close game. The Bears won't have enough firepower to put up 35 and make it a blowout. But I think the Vikings can't score more than 17 or 20, even on a banged-up Bears defense. So I think the Bears win a tight one. If you need a score from me, I'll give you one. I'll give you 24-20 Bears.
Okay. Now, listen, before we skip to New York and we get to this Saints-Giants game, I just want to say real quick, I think, you know, obviously we both probably feel this way, but I think the Niners will, you know, really close the door on the Dolphins at 5-7 and they'll win that game. And, you know, Kaepernick will get some more practice. And then out here, man, I just don't think the Cardinals can go to Seattle and win. So I think, you know, Seattle will probably go to 8-5. And my man Russell Wilson, I have him at fantasy, the quarterback in their defense. I think they're gonna do good. I think they'll win.
Yeah, I can't fight that. I will say that the Seattle is beatable though. But I don't think that the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals are that this is not the week where they get off the schneid. I mean, they've lost.
Right, even with Skelton coming back, starting that offensive line against at Seattle too. We don't know what the weather's going to be in
the
Seattle defense.
The worst thing they did was go 4-0, and they teased everybody in Arizona to think that they're a high quality team. They go 4-0, and now they've lost.
I feel bad for my boy Fitzgerald, man. Can I tell you, Fitzgerald is the classiest player, probably in the league, in the NFL, man. He doesn't talk bad about nobody. He doesn't badmouth the offensive line, the coaches, the coordinators, the quarterbacks, nobody. He just goes out there and, you know, says, obviously I'm frustrated. I'd like to be getting more balls and do better and win. But, you know, I'm a Cardinal on my team. You know, it's refreshing. And I think it's something to be applauded because, you know what, Everybody, we talk about our top five wide receivers. Everybody talks about divas. This guy's a football player, you know, and a real humble dude. Fitzgerald's a good guy, and you know, does a lot obviously for the community and different stuff. So, but let's talk about Drew Brees and Eli Manning.
Drew
Brees. The Saints already done. Do you think the Saints are really already done? I mean, they're mathematically still alive. I mean, listen, 5-7. There's, you know, if they run a table, 9-7. There's a shot. Giants are 7-5. Giants have lost the last two to the Saints. They normally don't play well against Brees and the Saints. The Brees, they spread them out and do their thing. I just think this time it's different. It's in New York. They don't have their head coach, Joe Vitt, and, you know, this whole program. It's just not working for them this year. I don't think this is the same Saints team, and I think the Giants need it a little more. Obviously, Knicks is, you know, bloody nose, this, that, the third, the foot, Bradshaw, the foot, this. But I think the Giants are just winners. I think they'll do what they need to do. I think this one is going to get some points. I think it's going to be 30-27. Lawrence Tynes, good for 43.
Okay.
Giants win.
I like the Saints in this game. I like the Saints to win this game. I think the Giants are up and down. And if there's one team that you can't, you have to squash the Saints. You can't be in the fourth quarter. Apparently the Redskins, too, now, with RG3, because he's unbelievable, and he's got that run-pass option. But the Saints are a team that you can't be in a close game with the Saints and like your chances. I like Drew Brees in a close game, so I like him in the fourth quarter, driving down the field, matriculating the ball down the field, and scoring with 22 seconds left, beating the Giants in MetLife Stadium to go 6-7. Giants go 7-6. A high-scoring game.
Since you gave me 22 seconds left and all this foolishness, what's the score,
yeah,
homie?
I like the Giants. I mean, I like the Giants to score 27. I like the Pats to score 31. I mean, the Saints to score 31.
Okay. 31-27. Okay, so
yeah,
we have a reverse. I got a 30-23. So, all right, so our last game, Sunday night, this team is done, the 4-8 Lions. But it's a Sunday night game, and it's a division game, and obviously the 8-4 Packers. There's not much to say. Nelson's out. Starks is out. I think maybe Jennings starts to play a little bit more and come back and warm up, and Randall Cobb, James Jones, they have a big game. I think the Lions will play them tough. You know, they don't play as well on the road, but I just think that they'll – you know, they've got some pride, I would think. I think they'll play a little tough, but I think overall they drive up and down the field, right? But they don't in the red zone. They're like last in the NFL. They're horrible. So, to me, I just don't know if they'll score. I think it's going to be like 26-17 Packers.
Oh, wow. I think the Packers can score more than that. But I like the Packers, too. I mean, these two teams do play close games, and the problem with Detroit is that if you shut down Calvin Johnson, especially in the red zone, you let him drive up and down the field, but you shut him down in the red zone, then they have trouble scoring touchdowns, which is okay by me because I have Jason Hanson, the kicker, in two of my leagues. So
and Pettigrew
really
will probably drop a couple of touchdowns.
Oh, don't get on him like that. But Detroit's looking ahead to next year. Packers are looking ahead to the playoffs, trying to get their team right, trying to get Charles Woodson and Clay Matthews ready for the playoffs. So I like Green Bay. I think Green Bay takes care of business. I think they win pretty easily, something like, you know, again, 31-20 or 31-23. So I like the Packers in this game.
All right, cool. Well, listen, let's talk a little bit about last night. I mean, the Broncos and their division, they got a clinch, go to 10-3, beat the Raiders. I think for me the biggest thing is two things. Champ Bailey gets his 52nd interception of all time, you know, just show how incredible he is in a future Hall of Famer. And Peyton Manning, 310 yards and gets his 30th touchdown of the season. Moreno, who I didn't play, so I'm sick of myself, and Gary, and people are laughing at me, but hey, you know, maybe the law firm will make it up for me. But Moreno gets, like, what, 119 and a touchdown and had a great game.
32
and
carries. They kept feeding him.
He's a horse, feeding him. You know, he Wu-Tanged on him. So, Yeah, I mean, they 26-13. They did their thing. Carson Palmer throws another pick like he always does. Raiders are a mess. You know, it's hard to be a Raider fan. They're just a mess. The franchise is a mess.
Yeah, they need to be shaken up. So, all right. So we had a good run down the NFL, and let's keep the NFL momentum going. You know, we talked about our top five segments. So we're talking football. We're talking wide receivers.
Hey, just real quick for the other New York fans out there, right? I think Jaguars are going to beat the Jets.
Oh my God!
The Jets will throw a couple picks, and Jaguars will win. I just have to throw that out there, man.
I think the Jets got this one.
They got it.
But yeah, let's get into the receivers. So we have our top five segments, and today we're going through the top five receivers of all time. And let's just start it off. I mean, more than likely, Ray and Tate probably have the same number one receiver.
We do. Everybody knows. Listen, there's no secrets. Jerry Rice is the GOAT. He's the greatest.
He's the GOAT. He might be the greatest football player of all time.
Yeah.
Certainly
top
five.
It's him and Jim Brown, one and two. So that's, you know, it's Jerry Rice.
He's the best receiver of all time.
So I'm going to give you my honorable mention, and then I'll go number five. This is hard, right? Because if I'm being honest, there's a lot of guys that I would want to put on here that maybe can be here soon one day, still playing. I love Fitzgerald. I love Megatron. I love Reggie Wayne. Those are three guys that I think that can be here one day. But if I'm dealing with, you know, sort of the reality of it all, my honorable mention, I have to drop him down. I got to go with one old school guy. My honorable mention is Chris Carter. He just kept his touchdowns. Well, guess what? He also had, you know, 1,100 receptions. You know,
for a guy who just caught touchdowns, he had 1,100 receptions for almost 14,000 yards.
1,000 yards,
so
yeah.
That's a lot more than just catching touchdowns.
Yeah.
Imagine if he didn't have the drug problem. And if he are, you know, and if he wasn't in the beginning of his career in the doghouse in Philly, and he was able to do the production he did in the middle and the end of his career throughout.
130 touchdowns is 130 touchdowns. So I just have to give him that shout out. But for me, at number five, I'll go with the old veteran, the old stud. He could, you know, be easily, you know, somebody's number one or number two. But I'm going to go with Don Hutson, the old veteran, you know. 488 receptions, you know, like we talked about earlier, kind of the Babe Ruth of his day. He had almost 8,000 yards receiving, 99 touchdowns. And this is in an era where, you know, cats were not really passing the ball, you know what I mean? And to me, you know, he had his three rushing touchdowns, 284 rushing yards. I just think that Don Hutson is one of those guys that – him and also Lance Allworth, you know, I could, you know, say the old Chargers receiver, where they were just so far ahead of their time. So he's my number five, and I give him a lot of credit and a lot of respect. And
my honorable mention,
great receiver.
Chris Carter, just like yours. My number five guy is Terrell Owens. So he's sort of still playing, but if his career were to end now, he's number five. Now, it pains me a little bit to put a guy who is a top five receiver who has mediocre hands. His hands are better, not much better than average. I mean, they're average plus for a wide receiver. But the guy is an unbelievable force. 1,078 receptions, 15,934 yards, and 153 touchdowns. So two behind Randy Moss and, you know, 44 behind Jerry Rice. So number five receiver of all time, Terrell Owens, just because he made plays. And even though they called Michael Irvin the playmaker, Terrell Owens made plays, and he's a heck of a receiver. I mean, you always needed to know where Terrell Owens was. So that's
and did it with multiple teams.
Yep.
You know. Well, we'll keep it moving. For me, you know, I got T.O. a little higher, but right now at number four, I'm going in with the San Francisco 49ers' current old beast, Randy Moss. Now, his yards are still growing and increasing, so he's got, you know, over 780 receptions. You know, that's still increasing.
No, he got 973, Randy Moss.
Oh, 970. Oh, Wow, 973. Okay, this
yeah,
is this list that I'm looking at is a little old. So, I mean, 973. He's had what over 150 something touchdowns.
155 touchdowns. Yeah, 15,000 yards. 15,154. So his numbers are unbelievable.
I mean, to me, when I look at that it's just incredible. But the problem I have with Randy, and this is why I've got, obviously I've got T.O. a little high, I've got Randy at 4, is this. I mean, these numbers, they could be even better. Randy could have been better than Jerry Rice. He decided not to necessarily go over the middle. He decided
to
Yeah, well,
he doesn't go over the middle. And then in Oakland, 05 and 06, he took two seasons off and then comes back
that's
get
a big
23
problem,
touchdowns in 07 with the Patriots and goes to the Super Bowl.
And that's why I have a big problem, Randy Moss. But I will say this, and Chris Carter, kind of brought him up in Minnesota, and they, went to the NFC Championship that year in 2000 and lost to Atlanta. But he was so dominant. I mean, he destroyed teams by himself. He used to embarrass cats. Nobody will forget when he went to Green Bay on that Monday night and he was doing his little dance and all that and embarrassing them. And I have such respect for this guy, but he's the most frustrating cat in the world because I don't even understand even last year disappearing in Tennessee and Minnesota and bouncing around. It's just ugly to, stop trying. But he's back in San Francisco, maybe plays another year after this. He's done a couple of things, had a couple of touchdowns this year, and that's my number four, Randy Moss, man.
Okay. My number four is Marvin Harrison. So this guy was the consummate route runner. Great hands. He had a great quarterback in Peyton Manning, and he had a great team that got him the ball, and he brought along Reggie Wayne as his understudy. But the guy's unbelievable. 1,100 receptions, 14,500 yards, 128 touchdowns. For a guy that is probably like 6'1", 180. I mean, a small guy.
He's little.
And is a little guy, but great hands, great receiver, perfect prototype form, route running, everything that you want from a receiver.
Crisp.
You could find in Marvin Harrison. So
that down and out was deadly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was the man, I mean, for me, Ray already said it, but he moves up for me. I have T.O. at number three. The one thing that I would debate with Ray and argue about him, for me, with Terrell Owens, what I like about him over Randy Moss is that he'd go over the middle. He'd give you the post, the slant, the curl, and the yak, yards after catch. Owens would just smack cornerbacks off him and just take a five-yard curl and then break it for, 30 yards. And, that's just incredible. The only other guy that reminds me of that who, would be lower on this list that was like that, though, was my old reverend man, Isaac Bruce. He was just he'd catch a little slant for 5-10 yards, and then Isaac Bruce would be gone for 80, But T.O. is definitely my number three, and I hope he comes back. Minnesota could use him. They could use Chad Johnson. The Jets could use him. Plenty of teams, the Dolphins, people could use T.O. He's better than a lot of these bum receivers in the NFL right now.
Okay. All right, my number three is Randy Moss. Not much more to say except that this guy is really the scariest receiver ever, and even more than Jerry Rice, you needed to know where Randy Moss was at all times. So number three receiver could have been number one, won't be number one, number three receiver.
And my number two is Marvin Harrison. Ray already said, those stats are ridiculous. And what I think about him with Manning is that he just always caught the ball in traffic and did what he had to do.
Real quick, my number two, Don Hutson. I'll give you two stats. He played 11 years, 7 times he led the league in receptions, 8 times he led the league in yardage. In an era where they didn't throw, this guy was by far the best receiver of his generation. So Don Hutson, number two. And I think both of us, Jerry Rice, number one, 1,500 receptions, 22,895 yards, 197 touchdowns.
That's the crazy stat right there, 197 touchdowns, man. So, listen, it was a good show. We have to talk, more debatable, right, if we did the top five of right now. But even those sometimes are kind of the same, yeah. It's the same guys, people like Andre and this one and that one. But so listen, we'll catch everybody on Monday, And
you had a
check
great
out the
time.
Nets.
Enjoy the weekend. We'll
Nets
see
tonight,
you on
Knicks and Bulls Saturday. And let's go Steelers, baby. Big Ben. Ray and Tay.
We're out.
Later.
Hey, yo. It's E Complete. I'm back up in this TP. My second album, True Speaker. This track right here is crazy. I'm down. Control, cause I knew Santa Claus couldn't save my soul. If you had the cars that I had to hold since I was 9 years old, trust me when I tell you, the next year it fold. More than just bold, bullets over Broadway. It went down the Harlem Broadway. Pops were shot, moms were too. Dad is dead and moms were shot in the head. And now she's home just lounging, just chilling in the bed. Truth is I spit nice and most of y'all off the top of my head. Shoot at y'all and I spray all day. I give two F's about to say about May. I'm just here to bring that crazy poetry. Sometimes